Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the California Angels and the City of Los Angeles, on the occasion of Her Majesty's royal visit, please welcome internationally renowned opera star Enrico Palazzo.
Hey, it's Enrico Palazzo!
You should have been pulled in the front, but they have faith in you. You should have been pulled.
Hey, hello, and welcome everyone to a Palazzo Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Two L's, two Z's. I'm your host today, Britton Allen, and I'm very excited to be talking fantasy baseball with one of my favorite people from the fantasy baseball industry. Her name is Sarah Sanchez. You can find her on X at BCB underscore Sarah, S-A-R-A, and also at Blue Sky at BCB Sarah, no underscore, S-A-R-A. And what BCB?
Bleed Cubby Blue, man, my original writing gig where I do all my Cubs content, and you can find my pieces there a few times a week. I also occasionally I moonlight as one of our BCB After Dark writers, and that's kind of a fun little, goes up on Thursday night or goes up on Sunday night, asks a question, has a song. It's like a whole little fun thing. But yeah, you can find my Cubs writing over there. You can find my fantasy writing over at Baseball HQ, which I plug, if you are not signed up for First Pitch Arizona yet, Baseball HQ hosts it every year. Come join us in the desert. That's where I met Britton. It's where I get to hang out with all of my favorite fantasy baseball friends. I promise you, all of your fantasy baseball friends are even cooler in person than they are on the internet. So definitely make sure that you come to First Pitch Arizona.
Absolutely. One of my favorite trips every single year, First Pitch Arizona. It's so much fun. And I love the Arizona fall games. I love going to all the Arizona fall games. And it's such a great location, too, because you got that Sloan Park where the Cubbies play right next to it. I love it. It's awesome.
Cubs. Who clinched today?
Hey, we are going to talk. I'm going to ask you some questions about your Cubbies since you're the Cubby expert. But I also wanted to mention that, you know, do you still write articles for Baseball HQ, isn't that right?
I do. Yes, I do the Playing Time Tomorrow column over there for the NL Central. And that's basically weekly, but kind of goes on like a rotation. We do like, you get 5 weeks on and 1 week off. So it's basically weekly.
Well, I know that because my wife, Sarah, will edit articles, and she edits yours. And I always say, hey, let me know when Sarah Sanchez has an article so I can get the sneak peek before it gets released. I get to take a look at it.
Sarah's the best. Is she coming back to First Pitch Arizona?
She is not. She is going to be staying with my two daughters. They have some things that need at least one parental unit to be here for. So she went, was it last year or the year before?
2 years ago.
2 years ago, well, and had a blast.
Two Sarahs in a First Pitch Arizona conversation for maybe the first time.
That's right. Yeah, she had a blast and would love to go, but only one of us could go, and she let me go because she's a wonderful person.
She is wonderful. She's great.
Yeah, she is, and she had a great time with y'all, and hopefully at some point the kids will grow up and go, I don't know, to college or something, and we can just do whatever we want. But until that day, it is just me going to First Pitch Arizona. But Sarah, here we are in what I call crunch time, Captain Crunch, delicious cereal. Right here at the end, like if you're in a roto league, you know, September 28th, that's the last day of the regular season, full stop right there. And if you're in a points league, this is probably championship week or maybe somewhere right around there. So what about you? How are you doing in your leagues? How are you handling this crunch time?
Well, you know, it depends on the league. So I have a league where I've been basically between first and fourth for the last month and a half. And that league is super winnable. So I'm trying to eke out every single point I can get there. I've got a main event qualifier that I feel like I'm too far behind in to come back, but I'm in fourth. There's a lot of points between fourth and first, though. There's like 15 points, and I don't know if I can make up 15 points, but I'm trying. I'm doing my best. I am elite. You know, you have those leagues that you can't do anything in, like a gladiator league or something like that. There's also, right. I'm part of the First Pitch Arizona rookie draft, and so we do a draft before FPAS every year that is only rookie eligible players, but it's redraft. So it's not like you don't keep the guys from before. You're just trying to play a redraft league with only rookie eligible guys. And I am in second there right now. There are no moves I can make. There's nothing I can do. I don't think I'm going to catch James Anderson, but I think I'm solidly in second. And I would like to thank my new personal favorite Cub, Moises Ballesteros, for making that a reality.
How did I know Moises Ballesteros would come up? I'm so happy because I remember we saw him live.
We did.
At First Pitch Arizona. Yes, and you pointed him out. You said, that's the guy right there.
And, listen, man, if you're in a league where he's still available, he should not be available. He's hitting cleanup for the Cubs every day right now. The hit tool is nuts. Like, I'm not trying to go ahead of the rundown here or anything, but he strikes out less than 20% of the time. He walks more than he strikes out, and he hits for power. He is 21 years old. He hit a home run 112 miles per hour off the bat today that would have blown your mind. Like, I'm so enamored. I love him. And he's been great. He should be rostered everywhere.
Yeah, he's a rookie, but he has a long track record of success in the minor leagues, in the upper leagues. So that's a good indicator that he's going to be successful. And love hitting at Wrigley Field. You probably heard of it. Or you've been there several thousand times.
Every now and again. I live 5 blocks from Wrigley, for those of you who don't follow my Cubs exploits on Twitter or Blue Sky, but please do.
Yes, please do follow Sarah on X and Blue Sky, because a few years ago, me and my buddies from college rented a house within like a block of Wrigley Field. And so for our weekend, that's what we did.
Awesome.
Yeah, we just hung out together, like 12 of us. I'm not even kidding. Like, people were sleeping on the floor like we're back at the old frat house or something, you know. So and that's what we do. We go out to, we eat something and then go to the Wrigley Field. But I digress. I wanted to ask you something, because last week I picked up the Cubs closer Andrew Kittredge, and I was so excited because I got him, and I was like, oh, he got 3 saves. Well, somebody else picked up Brad Keller, and lo and behold, yesterday and the day before, these go Brad Keller saves. So what do you think? Is that just how it worked out, or are we in a committee situation?
It is a little bit of a committee, but I picked up Kittredge in places too, and I think that that's a good move on your part. So I'm going to back up about 3 weeks ago when Daniel Palencia, who another one of my Cubs favorites, if you have been sleeping on Daniel Palencia this season, you should not, as you do prep for next year. He needs to be on your radar. He throws 102 miles per hour. He has all of the things you want for an elite closer. He had a little bit of a shoulder issue. So he threw a pitch and it kind of, you saw him kind of grab, and it was like, yikes, like looked like it could be season ending or something. He's been playing catch with the Cubs and appears to be on track to rejoin them at some point this season. So barring off-season terrible injury news or something that happens in the postseason where you think he might be hurt, I think he could be a really good steal as a closer in draft season next year. But anyway, when Daniel Palencia got hurt, Brad Keller had not given up an earned run since the All-Star break. Not one. Like, zeros across the board since July 18th. And he's the setup guy in the eighth. So a lot of people, myself included, kind of thought Brad Keller would be the dude. But if you look beneath the surface a little bit, the Andrew Kittredge, who the Cubs acquired at the trade deadline from the Orioles, has the best K-BB on the team since he came over from the Orioles. So you kind of have to like take out the Orioles stats there and just look at the body of work he's done with the Cubs. But if you look at the body of work he's done with the Cubs, his K minus BB is like 31, 32%. He's got an immaculate inning. I think he's gotten four save opportunities so far this season with the Cubs. Now, I do think there's a little bit of mix and matching going on at the end of games for Craig Counsell right now. If he thinks Keller is more likely to match up well with the guys who are coming in the ninth, he'll go that route. If he thinks it's Kittredge, he'll go that route. I also think he's kind of deploying Keller in a high leverage situation. So right. Keller might pitch the seventh, Keller might pitch the eighth, and then Kittredge comes in the ninth. But I think he leaves one of those guys in reserve to pitch the ninth, if that makes sense. Yeah. So I like both of them. I think Kittredge is probably going to get more saves than Keller, but I think they're both going to get saves down the stretch.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. They're both worth grabbing. If you have like, you know, I'm in a league where there's like three saves are the difference between first and fifth, you know?
That's so, 5 points, man.
I'll tell you what, everything matters. Every inning pitched, every save, everything matters. So I like them both. I picked up Kittredge. I'm hanging on to him. If I could pick up Keller too, I might as well pick him up too. And it's funny how the Cubs like closer situation has just kind of been, you know, like Presley and then Porter Hodge. What happened to Porter Hodge? Where's Ben Brown? Like what happened? I don't know. But Kittredge and Keller are the guys to get. What about
A little bit of suspense here. I think Britton is frozen, so I'm not sure who we're going to talk about, but we are definitely going to talk about somebody great when Britton comes back. While we are waiting for Britton's internet to unfreeze and I learn who this question is, somebody in the chat mentioned, don't forget Sarah's in the Palazzo Invitational. I am in the Palazzo Invitational, and I'm doing pretty well in the Palazzo Invitational, so I gotta take a look at where my people have landed there, but I am in the Palazzo Invitational. You froze right as you said what about, and so I don't know how to answer your question.
I'm in the Palazzo Invitation too. I don't think I'm doing very good. It's just one of those things.
I'm gonna look that up right now, but what was the question? What about
I was asking about Jameson Taillon.
Oh sure, yeah. So JMO is really interesting to me. If you need strikeouts, he is not your dude, unfortunately, at least not at this point in his career. He's also prone to give up homers, but he doesn't walk a lot of guys, so he tends to give up solo homers instead of huge amounts of runs. Pretty good for in a quality start league. He's going to get a ton of innings. Craig Counsell needs innings. The thing that is probably the biggest danger for the Cubs heading in to the postseason, Matthew Boyd is at a career high in innings. He hasn't looked very good his last four or five starts. Matthew Boyd owners. I have a bunch of Matthew Boyd. He's won me a ton of leagues, but I think the magic might be off the Matthew Boyd shine at this point in the season. Cade Horton, who has also been excellent, winning me some pitching categories in terms of ratios and getting wins here and there. He's basically on a pitch count. I mean, he goes five or six innings, but he doesn't really throw more than 80 pitches in any outing, which kind of makes what he's done even more impressive, in my opinion. But so the Cubs have two guys who they really need in the postseason that are basically close to or above their innings max. And then they need innings from a guy like Jameson Taillon. So Taillon is going to get to go. He's going to get to throw six, seven innings and he's going to rack up those wins and he can rack up some quality starts for you down the stretch. Did he pitch today or did he pitch yesterday?
He pitched Monday at Pittsburgh. It pitched well.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah. He pitches.
But I think he's a great American ballpark next.
Yes, exactly.
I don't know, man.
In beautiful Cincinnati, Ohio, right there in downtown Cincinnati. I don't know if I want to play Jameson Taillon if I'm tight in my categories or my, you know, my whip and ERA, but then again, you know,
you need wins though. Wins are another one of those categories like saves where you can make up 5 or 6 points really easily. And Taillon will get you some wins.
Totally agree. Wins is like in most of my leagues, that's like the tightest, which is funny. Like after, you know, 1500 innings pitched, of everybody or somewhere around there, everybody's pitchers, that it's literally like within one or two wins. It's shocking how that turns out after all these months. Yes. But all right. So I was you know, these last 2 weeks, I'm looking for like who's hot, like Buster Poindexter, hot, hot, hot. I got to have somebody hot to help, you know, give me those last minute stats. And one of the guys that's super hot, if you're looking for a hitter.
Man, these like every time the name is about to come out of Britain's mouth, the internet gods are not on our side tonight, y'all. I'm curious who he might say this. So let me see if I can pull up the fantasy player rater for the last. Who is it, Britain? We missed the name. We got everything but the name.
I'm so sorry. My I'm having some technical difficulties apparently, but we'll soldier through. Austin Martin for the Twins, second baseman. And I always think about, every time I see his name, I think about the car, you know, that James Bond drove.
Yeah, yeah.
Aston Martin.
Aston Martin, but it's close Aston enough, man. Martin.
It makes me confused for this British luxury automobile. Anyway, but I'm talking about the player Austin Martin, 2020 first round draft pick, last 15 games is an 832 OPS, 289 batting average. He's not going to hit you any power, but he's going to hit bat second in the order every single day, lefties and righties, and, you know, get you batting average runs, RBIs. I don't know if your middle infielder is kind of sucking, kind of slumping, and it's a redraft or whatever. Hey, get rid of it and go pick up this hot hitter. What do you think?
No, I think that's a great call. He also will steal you some bags. He's got 8 stolen bases so far in his time with the Twins, hitting .314 in September. So far, he's, you know, and power is one of those interesting things. Like, we in the fantasy community tend to think about power as home runs. How many home runs can this guy hit me? But there's also a difference between the guys who are hitting you like slap singles and the guys who are hitting doubles, hitting triples, right? And I think Austin Martin, to my mind, at least, and looking at some of these WRC plus metrics and looking at a handful of other things here, has a little bit more extra base potential, at least on the like double side of things, than he does. He's not a zero in that category, right? This is more like Nico Horner power than it is like a slap hitter. I guess Nico Horner is a slap hitter, but you know what I mean? Like, he can leg out a triple.
Yes, 100%.
And Moises Ballesteros is on fire. I agree, Uncle Ted. That is correct.
There you go. I love Moises Ballesteros. Let's see. What other hot hitters are you looking at? Uncle Ted mentions them in the chat. Ooh, look at that. Look at that. I hit the button and there it popped up. It's like I'm a pro or something. Totally, totally, totally awesome. Astros outfielder Zach Cole. Are you familiar with Mr. Zach Cole?
You know, I am not familiar with Mr. Zach Cole.
That's because he came out of nowhere to replace Yordan Alvarez, who may or may not about to go on the IL. We're not 100% sure with an ankle injury.
It's Jordan in 2025. He's going on the IL. He is the reason that half of my teams are failing. And I...
Oh, no.
You know, I did this to myself. It's fine. I knew better. I was chasing power early in drafts this year instead of speed. And so I locked up a bunch of, like, Jordan. I have a bunch of just Kyle Schwarber. Like, I got a bunch of the big, beefy power bats, and Jordan did very little for me except sit on my bench.
Yes, it's been a tough year for Yordan Alvarez and his drafters. That's just it. It's kind of like on again, off again. Had a great season last season. Everything held up. All that power. Yeah.
Zach Cole, man, looks like hitting .375, .474, .750 in 19 plate appearances so far. That'll play. 2 home runs.
Yeah, that's what we say. That's the motto here at the Plazo Podcast, 2Ls, 2Z, Carpe Diem, which, as me and Mike V always say, is French for eat more beignets. Eat those beignets while you can, because endless beignets is not a thing. So you just got to eat your beignets when you can, Carpe Diem. So grab a rando hot hitter that is 100% on your waiver wire is Mr. Zach Cole for the Astros, because just like you said, who knows how long Alvarez is going to be out. So you just want to pick up some some hot hitter and, you know, ride it out till he gets not hot, because he's definitely going to get not hot.
But, well, let me give you a name that I like as a hot hitter who is not 100% rostered at this moment in time. He's been wicked good for the last 2 weeks. It's a name that will be familiar to podcast listeners. Mickey Moniak over there in Colorado.
Yes.
Scorching the baseball, y'all. And he's playing for, he's playing for a terrible team, but that just means he's going to play and he's going to get to play through it. Still a first round pedigree guy. And, you know, when he gets hot, he can win you a league. Maybe not a guy you want to keep on your roster all year, but if he's available, pick him up, throw him in a spot if he can, and ride out a hot streak.
He's the perfect type of player we're talking about. You know, one that can catch fire, play Coors Field, and, you know, just rack up some hits and batting average and probably some home runs too. Lefty power bat, never a bad thing. I like him a lot. Here's another guy I wanted to talk about. He's kind of been on the radar for a while, but just in case he slipped through the cracks, Washington Nationals outfielder Dalen Lyle has been crazy hot, scorching hot. Like that time I took the brownies out of the oven and it slid and hit my forearm hot. I still have the scar. I was 9 years old. That's how hot he is. This month he's hitting .423, three home runs, 14 runs, 9 RBIs. Overall, he's got a .290 batting average. He bats cleanup for the Nats every day. He's doing what you wanted James Wood to do.
He's been great. And I actually just saw him at Wrigley because the Nationals were just in town playing the Cubs. And he hit two triples in the same game. It was out of control, man. Like, I don't know. I don't remember the last time I saw a player hit two triples in a game. It was pretty nuts. Got good speed. He's got good power. In the last 14 games, three home runs. He's hitting .389. And, you know, despite being on a team that is not that great, 7 RBIs, 13 runs, that'll play. Absolutely must roster Dalen Lyle.
I love guys like this that aren't a regular starter, right? Like, he's trying to make an impression.
Yes.
Like, he's playing for his career. Like, he's going to impress the new general manager. You know, they fired Rizzo. And so, like, he's trying to he's playing for now, sure, but he's really playing for the rest of his life, like his career. And when you got that fire, and, you know, plus he wasn't on the starting day roster, so, you know, he's probably a little bit fresher than most of the guys in there. But yeah, Dalen Lyle. And you just got to love the name Dalen. Like, what up, D-Day? I love you, Dalen. Keep hitting, buddy. I hope you make the team.
He absolutely destroys baseballs, too. I was so impressed with his hitting approach when I was watching him. I was like, what's going on right now? This guy is murdering the Cubs.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talked about Zach Cole a minute ago, Astros outfielder. It's only like 3 or 4 games or something. But you go to StatCast, man, it looks like Aaron Judge power red numbers. Like, yeah. Zach Cole can knock the lick out of the ball. Is it going to last? Nope. Not with a 35% strikeout rate or whatever it is, but that he sports in the minors. But like I said, carpe diem. So that was Zach Cole.
Anybody beignets, else? Man.
Eat those beignets. I have a t-shirt that says beignet all day. Because if I could, that's what I would do. I would just pop those beignets all day.
I think I have a t-shirt that says rosé all day, but like currently could use a little bit of rosé to get the frog out of my throat, I think. A couple of names in the chat that I want to make sure we don't miss. Michael Ted shouts out Carlos Cortez.
Oh, good one.
Carlos Cortez playing for the Athletics in that bandbox of a baseball park. Like, truly, Sutter Health Park, man, might be the most ridiculous park effect this season. The A's went from basically playing in a very pitcher-friendly environment to one of the three most hitter-friendly environments.
Love it.
In the American League. You know, he hasn't been up all that long, but so far he's hit .329, .351, .603, and 77 plate appearances. He's got 4 home runs. And in the last 14 games, he's hitting .462 with 4 home runs. So if you're looking for somebody who's hot right now, and then another name that is flying way too far under the radar, who I wrote about in Playing Time Tomorrow last weekend, is Jake Bowers. Yes. So the Brewers turned Aaron Civale into Andrew Vaughn, and then Andrew Vaughn decided that he was going to be first-round pedigree Andrew Vaughn, who all of us have been waiting for forever. But they've kind of, it's not even so much that Andrew Vaughn cooled off, it's that they got Jake Bowers back, and they've been playing Jake Bowers as much as they possibly can. He's in basically a strong side platoon at the moment, but Jake Bowers is a guy who's probably sitting on your waiver wire right now, and in the last 14 days, he's hit .407 with two home runs, and he's playing, you know, 5 out of 7 games basically a week for the Milwaukee Brewers, who are an excellent offense. So if you're looking for a corner guy or you're looking for a guy with corner outfield eligibility, Jake Bowers is somebody to keep in mind.
He's a good defender too. And, you know, another one of our
Uh-oh. I think we're about to try to guess. Who should we guess? Who should we guess that Britton thinks we're talking about next? Is it a guy whose name is already in the chat, or is it somebody new? Who is our, we're talking Jake Bowers, we're talking defenders. Where could this go? You're back.
I'm so sorry. I apologize.
No, it's actually turning into a game. It's great. We can guess who you're going, where you're going next.
Would you believe me? This literally has never happened before.
No, I do believe you actually, because you know, the internet does its thing sometimes. But who you got? Who is your last guy?
I wanted to talk about a pitcher real quick who pitched today. And I know this is recency bias, but Tyler Wells for the O's has made 3 starts since coming back from his UCL surgery. He's been playing great. 17 innings pitched, only 4 earned runs. He had a great, great start today. It was against the Chicago White Sox, but still. 6 innings pitch, 1 run, 4 Ks, 1 win. Got to get that win. And the O's have kind of been hitting, and they also got back Westberg today. I kind of like that too.
Yeah, man, the Orioles. I thought they were going to be so good this year, and yikes.
It's weird. So they had all those prospects,
no pitching. They had no pitching. And Adley kind of took a step back.
Adley is having a terrible year. If Pedro Pajes,
yeah,
his numbers aren't that different than Adley Rutschman's.
No, they're not. Not at all. And that's shocking, right? That's not
very shocking.
If you took Adley Rutschman early in a draft, I think that was
unless you also took Kyle Raleigh, you're in trouble.
True. Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, and this is, you know, losing Santander did hurt them. That was a lot of power that walked out the door. And I think they tried to replace it with Tyler O'Neill, who's been doing his best Jordan Alvarez impersonation on the IL most of the year. So
Santander really too. Yeah. It did. Either way you look at it, it didn't work out. Letting Santander go, you know, signing O'Neill to like a real money deal, $40 million for however many years or whatever. So yeah. Whoops. I don't know, but Tyler O'Neill's back now. So, and I think he hit a home run yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Oh, there we go.
Or maybe today. So, you know, in the season strong. There's somebody in the Conley Early, another pitcher that has been called up by the Boston Red Sox. Uncle Ted mentions him. Yeah, this dude looks legit. He's had only 2 starts, and he'll probably, you know, go through some rough patches, but he looks good.
18 Ks in 10 and a third innings.
Just bowing through, making it look easy against big leaguers. Like, what's up? He's like, I'm 20 years old. Get out of here.
Well, and I, you know, one of the things that's interesting about the Red Sox to me right now, just kind of a little bit of trivia. Craig Breslow, their new president of baseball operations, was the pitching guy for the Cubs. And he basically he revamped the Cubs' whole pitching infrastructure, everything. So the pitch lab, if you ever hear Chicago sports writers talk about that, the Cubs really didn't have a ton of in-house starting pitching options for the longest time. The pitch lab really changed that. That's where you get the development of Justin Steele. You get the development of a guy like Javier Assad. You get the development of prospects like Cade Horton and Ben Brown. And Craig Breslow really oversaw all of that. I think that you're seeing a little bit of that, his mindset with how he thinks about pitching in terms of how they're advancing some of the Red Sox young pitchers. And, you know, there have been quite a few success stories that have come out of Boston this year, even playing for other teams, right? Like Quinn Priester was traded away from Boston to become, I don't know, man. He's like Jose Quintana light for the Orioles. He just like goes out there, six innings, doesn't give up a bunch of runs, gets you a win.
Yeah, he's got like 14 wins on the year. It's crazy, Quinn Priester. But he's doing it.
Sal Stewart in the chat from Charles G. Lynch also 100% agree. A couple weeks ago for Baseball HQ was wondering if it was going to be a Sal Stewart September, and it has been a Sal Stewart September. This kid also just like, he has no idea that he is supposed to be a prospect in struggle. He's playing Spencer Steer out of a job right now, and that's kind of crazy when you think about it.
What a great, great story, too. What, listening to his interviews, he is a ball of positivity and energy, and I'm so happy that y'all brought up Sal Stewart. Man, he is just hitting left and right, and it looks like he's not going anywhere. He's up to stay. And because they did release, we poured one out the other day, Jake Fraley. They DFA'd Jake Fraley. Do you remember him?
I do. I just saw him with the Braves.
Yeah, so the Braves must have caught him off the waiver wire or something, but yeah. But Jake Fraley, he's out. But they still have my one of my favorite players, TJ Friedel.
For now.
That's for right.
Now. Yeah, the Reds are an interesting team, and they're still playing for something, right? Like, I was really glad that the Cubs were able to clinch today, because I've been staring at their last 10 games on the schedule for a while now and worried it was a trap. Because they go to Great American Ballpark for four games, and the Reds are still in it. Terry Francona is one of the best managers the game has ever seen. The man is going to wind up in the Hall of Fame. You do not want to be going head-to-head against a guy managing a young, talented team when there's still stuff to play for. Then they have three games at home against the Mets. The Mets are still in it. They're still playing for something, right? Like, it's like, and Mets versus Cubs is one of those old NL East rivalries. They haven't been in the same division since they redid everything, but there is still some bad blood there. There is like history between the Mets and the Cubs. And then the Cardinals come to town. And look, the Cardinals have been terrible this year. They're out of it. But you don't want to end your year with three games against the Cardinals, where they can determine if you get to host a wild card series or win the division or something, right? So I've just been staring at this stretch for a while now, and I think there's some adventure in there for the Reds still.
Yeah, it's going to come down to, and you're right, you make a great point with Terry Francona as such. Like, such a great manager, players manager. Everybody's going to play hard, and that's dangerous, especially when you're at home. And obviously anything can happen, because that's how baseball works. But here's another name I wanted to bring up. This dude hit three home runs the other day. Dominic, I'm going to say Canzone.
Yeah, that's right.
If it's Canzone, I apologize. But yeah, so was that just a career night, or Dominic Canzone for the Seattle Mariners, or is that a hot beignet that you need to pick up, put the powdered sugar on, dip it in the chocolate sauce or the caramel sauce, whatever you like? What do you think? Is he a beignet?
Canzone's been really good this year, so I don't want to be a Debbie Downer. And the Mariners have been good this year, and the Mariners have been fun. 237 plate appearances. Canzone's hitting 304, 363, 491. Honestly, with those types of numbers, I'm not like, you might be able to pick him up and do some platoon type of stuff with him, but I don't know, man. Canzone is one of these guys I used to pick up for like a UT type of guy when I really needed to not take a zero and then drop him immediately. So I'm having a hard time believing in this, but it does look sustained, and I don't think he's going to hit you three home runs most weeks. I don't think he's going to hit you three home runs most months, but I do think he can hit for average, and he's in a good lineup.
He's in a good lineup, and Seattle's got a lot to play for coming up with series against the Astros and Rangers, and so they're going to be, you know, because I think the last time the Mariners made the playoffs, wasn't it like 10 years ago or 15 years ago? I can't
remember. They were in the playoffs in 2021, I think, or 2019. I remember I was at a conference. I was at a PR conference for my day job, and I was listening to the Mariners and Astros in the wild card. And I believe the Mariners were about to beat the Astros And then the Astros came all the way back. And you could almost just like see, like you could see the Astros like postseason momentum take off. Yordan Alvarez hit a walk off and it was over. It was the Mariners never came back. The Astros, I think, made it all the way to the ALCS or the World Series. It was kind of ridiculous. And I was super bummed about it because I wanted that Mariners team to win.
I do too. I root for the Mariners a lot. I like the team. And yeah, I think they were banging those trash cans. And so they just, you know, rocketed. Yeah, I think what I was thinking that the Mariners hadn't won like a playoff series.
They have not won. Yeah. They were going to win that game. And I remember them talking about how, they're finally going to win. And I was like, and then just no.
Then the evil empire came in and Darth Vader took them out.
It was the Death Star.
I don't know. I don't have anything against Houston Astros. I don't care, but it's just fun. You know, you need a little bit of a heel and a villain every now and then. And they are good for that.
They are. That's true.
Here's another interesting name that I like. Maybe not so much for this year, but for next year. CJ Kafis for the Guardians, first base. Power hitter, kind of one of their top prospects coming up. Have you seen anything or have any interest in CJ Kafis?
Well, a couple of things. So Cleveland is an interesting park to hit in. Last year, it played more hitter friendly than most years. It has not played hitter friendly this year. And so, you know, I want people to like kind of not look necessarily at Kafis's major league numbers so far in his brief 116 plate appearances.
Right.
His minor league numbers are extremely interesting. So at age 23 season, basically goes from AA to AAA. He's got a WRC plus across two levels of 151. That is legit. The K rate's little high at 25%, but it was 17% in AA. 27% in AAA, you sort of imagine he can work that out.
Right.
The thing about that 151, that is basically where he has lived for his time in the minors. He is 50-ish percent better than normed league average than all the other hitters around him. Yeah, that'll play. I'm extremely interested in seeing what CJ Kafis can do long term.
Okay. Okay.
He could develop into being one of their best hitters. You know, obviously you've got Jose Ramirez, who is the best hitting third baseman in the game. Love Jose Ramirez. Always one of my favorite players. And not only is he just he reminds me of that little chicken hawk in back in the, just kind of walking around like this, plays the game right, such a leader, and took a less money to stay in Cleveland because he likes it there, and it's not all about money to him. He loves to play. So shout out Jose Ramirez. I had to trade him in an auto new league because I'm rebuilding. And in auto new leagues, it's like a dynasty keeper with money value attached.
And the arbitration system and everything. I played a couple. I'm bad at them. I love it.
And I can't balance a checkbook to save my life. Or clicking on an Excel sheet literally gives me like panic. Like I don't want to do that. But auto new, even with the money and the budget stuff, it's still pretty fun. Like I haven't really had too much trouble with it, but yeah, I traded him for Max Clark for my rebuilding team. So I felt bad, but I couldn't afford him anymore and I was out of contention. So I had to
turn some of those assets into trades.
I didn't have a choice. I had to say goodbye to my keeper, Jose Ramirez, but oh, well, that's all right. I'm sure he'll be happy in his new home.
I will say Jose Ramirez might be one of the most underrated superstars of our time. And we're going to look back when we start talking about his Hall of Fame numbers and everything and be like, Jose Ramirez did what? Right. He really kind of came on so strong, almost the same way that like Adrian Beltre kind of snuck up on you. Is like, oh, this guy is like elite, you know? Yep. And that's what I think about Jose Ramirez. Yeah. We've got some also great. Yeah. He's got a great hook. I wouldn't get in a fight with Jose Ramirez. Kim Anderson shouldn't have either. One of my favorite.
He ruined Tim Anderson's career.
He might have ended it. He was just like, I'm out.
He was never the same after that. And look, I don't know. I can't remember off the top of my head, like why that.
I don't remember why exactly it happened either. Yeah.
You don't talk S, does it? Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember what happened. I know they got into a fight, and then Tim Anderson got knocked out, and that was basically the end of his career. I think he played like 1 year at the Marlins and then 1 year at the Angels. Yeah. But he was like, what's Tim Anderson back in the day with the White Sox, like a 2020?
Yeah, he was. He was a guy we used to take in like the third round, like 300 hitter, 2020 guy. Like the crazy thing about the – well, two things about the Jose Ramirez thing. I agree with you. Whatever was said, Jose Ramirez got the last word. And Tim Anderson was never the same.
Conversation over, says Jose Ramirez.
One of my favorite post-game interviews of all time was Terry Francona getting asked about that, though. For starters, Terry Francona calls Jose Ramirez Hosey, which is just like the most endearing Tito thing. It's like, oh yeah, Hosey over there, you know? It's like, I can't remember exactly what he said about this, but y'all should go look it up because it'll make you laugh out loud. It's like, he got asked about that, and he was like, well, I wouldn't get in a fight with Hosey. You know, it was just very, like, backed up his guy, gave Jose Ramirez his flowers, and then, like, dropped the mic and walked off the stage. It was amazing.
Yes. I love Terry Francona, too. He's one of my all-time favorite managers, and I'm happy that he's back in the game and hopefully health-wise doing really well. And that's why I've kind of been one of the reasons I've been kind of a Cincinnati fan. I have a friend that I went to opening day with 2-3 years ago just to go to opening day in Cincinnati. You know, they have a parade.
Oh, yeah.
The city shuts down.
MLB's all the city.
Yeah, exactly. So they shut it down. And I remember my grandfather always used to say, you know, if anyone asked, when's opening day? Is it this day, that day? He would say, it's whenever the Reds play. That's opening day. So I wanted to go, and my buddy went up there, and I loved it. It was awesome. So we got there for batting practice. You know, we got there early. We got our Skyline chili dogs sitting out there. So it was just
where you lose me on the Cincy stuff. No Skyline chili. Everything else I'm with you on.
Yeah, it's funny. It's not. It's an acquired taste. A little too. A little too pumpkin spicy, I would say. I don't know if you're into the pumpkin spice.
Not in my chili.
Not in your chili. Yeah. I was like, this is a little, somebody put a little cinnamon, too much cinnamon in this thing. I don't care. It's chili. Whatever.
I am a New Mexico girl. My family has been living in New Mexico for centuries, and the chili we make is very different than what other people think of as chili. And it is absolutely not what Skyline passes off as chili in Cincinnati. So New Mexican green chili stew is like big chunks of pork sauteed for hours with green chili and our spices and garlic and onion. And it is delicious. And it is not whatever they're doing in Cincinnati. But I agree with you on all things Terry Francona. I'm not sure it's going to happen. It could happen. The National League wildcard race is a little interesting, but this Reds team really has done a nice job of staying in the race and making things interesting down the stretch.
Andrew Abbott is not talked enough about what a great season he's had this year. Excuse me. Cincinnati Reds starting pitcher, Andrew Abbott.
Absolutely.
Totally underrated. I don't think he gets any credit for how well he's just consistently. He went through a rough patch after the All-Star break, like maybe lost 4 in a row, 5 in a row, something like that. But he's kind of bounced back lately. But such a great, great consistent for most of the season was Andrew Abbott. So there are all those kind of little players like that that, you know, you pick up like in a 50-round DC, you know, you pick them in like round 25 or something. And, you know, the good, the bad, and everything in between. But here we are, you know, 2 weeks left in the season, and he's still making starts. So,
Andrew Abbott has been excellent. I mean, according to the Fangraphs player rater, he's been one of the top. Hold on. I have a filter on here. One sec. Let me remove my 14-day filter.
Is he like a top 15 starting pitcher?
We're about to find out. Let me limit this to just starting pitchers. Let's see here. Yeah, Abbott is a has been a $12 pitcher, 26 overall, and you got him a pick 505. So yep. I mean that is outstanding value. It's actually the best value on the board, according to this, except for Trevor Rogers, who went at 727 and has been a $19 pitcher. That's it. Yeah. The next most valuable pitcher was Andrew Abbott. Yeah, he's been great this year. 100%.
And he was good last year too. Of course, I don't think anybody believed in it, and that's why he got him, you know, at that ADP. But yeah, he's been a great story.
I normally would never ask you to do this, Britton, but I need you to put the Nick Lodolo is Timu Pivetta quote comment on the screen, because that's hysterical. I don't know who that is, but well said. Well said, F. That is
shut. Correct. Shout out all the folks in our live chat. Thank you for being with us. I know it's late in the season and people are fantasy football, and I got to go pick up Troy Franklin, whoever that is. I don't know. Somebody said I need to go pick him up. But thank you all for being here. F, shout you out. Uncle Ted.
You all are correct about the handedness, but that's funny stuff, man.
So, let's see, any other hot, yeah, here we go. See, this is Uncle Ted's thing. It's about the lefty hitters. He loves the lefty hitters.
I mean, lefty starters have been pretty legit for sure. A lot of guys who have overperformed from the left side.
And a lot of those guys too are from like we were talking about it earlier. You said Sutter Health Park in beautiful Sacramento, California. Lefty power is what you want, because that right field, line is like 315, or maybe it's not that ridiculous, but Tyler Soderstrom was a great late round pick. If you got him, if you were in a DC and you got Tyler Soderstrom at Cal Raleigh, you're probably in the top three of that league, just based on or Shea Langeliers also up there too. But
yeah. What Sutter Health Park, I don't think we're talking about this enough. So I did a piece last year for FTN on single year park factors. And I recognize that for like understanding a park longer term, 3 years is better because you lose some of the noise or like some of the climate things that might've been going on or whatever. But
right.
For fantasy purposes, single year actually gets you a lot of information about, hey, was this guy overperforming? Was this a fluke? Is this pitcher going to be as good next year as this year? Those types of things. And one of the things I wanted to know was how would Sutter Health Park and Steinbrenner Field play? And we just didn't really have good answers for it. Single year park factors. Coors Field has a single year park factor of 115 overall. Its home run park factor is 111.
Yeah.
Sutter Health Park is second, 108 overall, home run factor of 113.
Wow.
113.
Love it.
Like, give me bombs for days at Sutter Health Park. The Cubs played their series against the Athletics early in like April, and it was cold. And they were putting up 9 runs, 11 runs. I was like, what is this park? And something's going on out there, y'all. But beware A's pitchers and draft A's hitters.
KC Bubba, all in preseason, said he's been to Sutter Health Park. He said he's been there. It's hot. It's hotter than heck, and balls are going fly out of there. So yeah, you're exactly right. Give me all those. I mean, they make Jacob Wilson look like a slugger out in Sutter Health, you know?
It totally does. And, you know, Steinbrenner hasn't been that. I mean, it's been better for the race, I will say, because the Trop was always a pitcher's park, has always been a pitcher's park. Steinbrenner is at 102 for home run. Or no, let's see. 116. No, that is right. 116 for home runs. Man. Okay.
That's
so
awesome.
Beware some of those Rays home run totals. I'm looking at you, Junior Caminero. He might be like more of a 35 home run guy.
Yeah.
But wow, 116 home run park factor for Steinbrenner. Crazy.
Yeah, Junior Caminero. That's talk about that. If you picked him up as your, later third baseman, woo.
The craziest start I did this year, and I will admit that this is borderline indefensible, but I had a method to my madness, and I knew the room really well because it's for the Glarf draft. So it's people that I play against every single year. It's always the same people. I know how hard that room is. I think I was picking 12th or 13th. So I had Jenny Butler and Lucas Beery on the turn behind me, and I knew I had to make make decisions, right? And I just had to be okay with it. And so the first five picks I had there, I picked Paul Skeens, Yordan Alvarez. That was the miss.
Yeah.
Mason Miller, Junior Caminero, Wilson Contreras.
Yeah.
The part of that that did not work was Yordan Alvarez. The rest of that was so solid. It was so good. And it was crazy when I did it. I was like, I'm setting a min on Caminero. But there were no third basemen left. It was like Caminero was going to be the next third baseman, and he was not coming back to me. Wilson Contreras was not coming back to me, and I wanted that 1B catcher, all the plate appearances situation. So I'll defend it, but I cannot believe the part of that that fell apart was Yordan.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. It's just injuries. Like if you go to any of your or speaking for myself, I guess all my DCs on NFBC, and you look at the pitchers, 95% of them have the little red thing next to it. Like I'm down to my last 9 pitchers that are still pitching. One of them, like, it's random too. Like, I've got Tyler Kinley starting in 2 leagues because he's literally, it's either I start him or start somebody that's on the IL. Like, I don't have a choice. So, you know, but that's, it all comes down to that luck injury factor. A lot of it does. And then also hitting on people you believe in, like Junior Caminero, like you did. And one guy that's done me, that's not really good English. One guy that's done me right. See, every now and then my Tennessee-ness comes out.
Listen, but, every now and again, my rural Utah comes out. I definitely understand.
But one guy I loved was Brandon Lowe. Not Lau, or maybe it is Lau.
Brandon Lau, Josh Lowe. Brandon Lau, Josh Lowe. Nate right. Lowe.
Brandon Lau, second baseman, who has been great for the Tampa Bay Rays, who has been great this year. I think he's got to be a top 5 second baseman, I would guess, because that position is pretty weak, too.
Well, let's see. Let's just pull that up.
Yeah, take a look.
I can pull up who our top second baseman of the season are, at least according to the player rater.
All right, hold on. Don't tell me. Let me see if I can.
Okay. So do you want to top 5? You want to just go in order who you think is there? Brandon Lau is 7, by the way.
Oh, is he? Okay. Does Jazz Chisholm qualify for second?
He does, and he is 2nd.
Yeah, there you go. See, man, that's – and he's qualified, like, outfield.
Outfield second. 3rd and 2nd, yep.
God, that's amazing. Is Bo Bichette still up there? Well, no.
Does Bo Bichette have second base eligibility?
I thought he did. I could be wrong.
Not according to how I've got this sorted. He's not up there.
All right, I'm blanking. Why don't you give me like the bottom 2.
Okay, so number 5 at $13 of value is Jose Altuve.
Makes sense. There you go.
Number 4 at $16 of value is Nico Horner.
Look at that. I never would have guessed that.
Oh, you know what? Let me tweak this. I have it on 12 team instead of 15 team. It's still Jose Altuve and Nico Horner, but their value goes up. So Altuve goes to a $17 player and Horner goes to a $19.9 player. So basically a $20 player.
Good for Nico Horner. That's awesome. Yeah, Nico's
hitting .301 and has 27 stolen bases this year. So if you were like off on Nico because he hit like .250 and didn't quite run as much last season, get back in on that Nico Horner game. Number 3 from your Kansas City Royals is Michael Garcia.
Yeah, he's been great.
Yeah, Michael Garcia hitting .289 with 23 stolen bases and 16 home runs. You already mentioned Jazz Chisholm, who's been amazing. 30 bags and 29 homers. He's going to have a 30-30 season.
Yeah.
Number 1.
I think I know. I'm going to take a guess. I think it's Bryce Terang.
It is Bryce Terang.
Yes.
Bryce Terang, who went 145th overall, 286, 24 stolen bases, 18 home runs, 75 RBIs, 92 runs for a Brewers offense that is crazy.
Amazing. Amazing. Bryce Terang. I think he's here to stay too because he's a good defender.
He's a great defender.
Exactly. So it's going to be making double plays and keeps hitting. Good for Bryce Terang.
I don't think he's going to pick 145 next year.
No, I don't think so either. I don't think so either. I think he's going to be one of the top second basemen selected. But do you have any other top hot hitters? Let me look in the chat and see if there's anybody else anybody wanted to. I know this guy. Where do you think old Pete Crow Armstrong is going next year?
Well, that's an interesting question. So at the All-Star break, I'm going to back up before that. I have Pete Crow Armstrong in a bunch of places this year, including the two leagues I'm doing best in.
Yep.
But the reason too. I have PCA in those leagues, one was an auction and one was a snake draft. He fell in both of them. Nobody's getting PCA for, I don't remember what I got him for, but it was, I just bumped up the bid. I was price enforcing. I was like, that's ridiculous.
Right.
Similarly, where he was going in drafts, like if he would slip past that 9-10 rant, I was like, come on, man. Like he's one of the top 150 players. Like we're not, what are we doing here? I had almost zero expectation that PCA was going to do what he did in the first half. He strikes out a lot. He chases a ton of pitches. He does have legit power, but the power is straight pull side. Like he's not hitting a lot of oppo shots. He has a ton of speed. The glove is elite. He's going to play every day. But when I saw what he did in April, I was like, yeah, it's going to regress. In May, I was like, it's going to regress. But by the time we got to the All-Star break, I'm like, I don't know, man. He's got like 25 home runs and he's already sold 25 bases. That's 40-40 pace. If he goes 40-40, he's a first rounder. I think what we saw since the All-Star break, where he's only hit like three or four home runs and really struggled with the bat, probably pulls him more into that like 2-3 turn territory, maybe middle of the third.
Yes.
But he has to go in that string of guys, like wherever you've got Jaron Duran, Michael Harris II, Jackson Churio, Jackson Merrill, PCA has to be in that cluster. And frankly, I might take PCA first out of those guys, maybe not ahead of Jaron Duran. The other ones haven't done what PCA has done before, you know? So it's a weird situation. He's going to be a super volatile player. That swing profile is going to have, he's going to have months where he's the best guy in baseball, and he's going to have months where he is almost unrosterable.
Yeah, we talked about him on your podcast with Shelley. We were driving down Narrative Street, as I remember, and I would bring up Pete Crow Armstrong. I was like, this guy is a fighter. Like he is a pumped up, all go, no stop. You know, he's kind of like the opposite of like Manny Machado. You know, not that Manny Machado like takes plays off or anything, but. You know, Manny Machado, he still puts up his numbers, but he's kind of a, you know, relaxed, kind of a chill dude. Whereas Pete Crow Armstrong is like a Dustin Pedroia or something. You know, he's just like, you know, let's go get him. So I always thought that's why Pete Crow Armstrong would be so successful. It's just because he's not going to fail. He's just not, you know? So, yeah,
he does get super amped. I actually worry about that for him in the short term. Like one of the things I've noticed about him in this slump, he gets real down on himself, like strike out, throw the bat, throw the helmet, like, you know, like not like I don't want to. He's not a head case or anything. And I don't want people.
Right.
He's a great player.
He's passionate.
He's super passionate. Right.
Yeah.
But I do think he had just spoken. Actually, it was on a Cubs game I was watching yesterday or the day before when he finally hit a home run after he'd gone in kind of a home run drought for a bit. He was talking about how he was pushing too hard. Like he kept thinking he had to hit home runs all the time. Like he didn't come into the season thinking he was going to hit 25 home runs before the All-Star break. That's not his game. His game is speed. It's doubles powers. It's legging things out. And the home runs just kind of came. And so I think he changed his approach a little bit, trying to get more homers, and that got him fewer homers. Whereas when he's right, he's not trying to hit the home run. He just is on accident.
I think he's the type of guy that all off season he's going to work on this. Like he's not taking a cruise to Greece. He's not, you know, hanging out at the beach, which is what I would do. But he's going to be working every single day. That's why I love Pete Crow Armstrong. Like at the back end of, like, would you take Jackson Churro or Pete Crow Armstrong? Like,
I just had this argument with a Brewers fan and we made a bet about it. I take Pete Crow Armstrong ahead of Jackson Churro for a couple of different reasons. And I love Jackson Churro for the record.
Yeah, he's great.
I think Jackson Churro is great. And I think there's a 30-30 season in his future. But Pete Crow Armstrong is going to have a 30-30 season this year. Like, we're going to see him do it. He's got 29 home runs. He's got 35 stolen bases. He's got 10 games to go. Pete Crow Armstrong is probably hitting 30-30 this season. Jackson Churro hasn't quite done it yet. And that's okay. I think he will. But, you know, you gotta see the thing before you do this, before you draft for that thing. And I think PCA has already shown us that he can do the thing. I also think PCA can improve. So there's a little bit of, and I'm not saying this just because they were traded for each other, but there's a little bit of Javi Baez in his swing profile, where Pete Crow Armstrong is a really good bad ball hitter. Yeah. He hits pitches he shouldn't hit with authority. And if he would channel more of like a Kyle Tucker approach, or I know he's been working a lot with Justin Turner. They're super close on the Cubs. If he would take some of what he's getting from Justin Turner and force pitchers to throw him his pitch, I think he'd just be a monster. I think he'd be 40-40. And I think the defense is, I know we don't have defense stats in fantasy. It is important because it's your playing time.
Yep.
But I just want to say about PCA's defense, we have never seen in the StatCast era defense like this. That if you go to...
I would say Andrew Jones is the best center fielder I've ever seen, but Pete Crow Armstrong would definitely be second.
Yeah, similar categories. So there was a, and I forget who I saw this from originally. I have it in an article, so I apologize that I'm not going to cite it right now because I did not see this first. I saw it from a post on Blue Sky, and then I cited it in an article I wrote. But and looked into it a little bit more. If you look at 5-star catches on Fangraphs or on Baseball Savant, and you look at the number of 5-star opportunities somebody has had and how many they've made, Pete Crow Armstrong is in like a different stratosphere of making those catches. Yeah. And so I'm actually going to pull it up so I get the numbers right as of now, because I haven't looked at this for a couple of months. But
watching him play is so fun.
He makes more than half of the 5-star opportunities that he has, and nobody else makes more than 30% of them with a certain number of attempts, right? And so that is just that's unbelievable. That shouldn't happen.
Aren't you so happy if you're a Cubs starting pitcher?
Oh, it's so fun.
and you just know you're going to get some but you're going to get some outs that you shouldn't have got because Pete Crow Armstrong is out there like a gazelle, you know, bouncing around, making these, you know, completely impossible catches almost look easy, you know?
Oh, he is an unbelievable defender to watch. And I actually think, and this is where I might get myself in trouble here. So for example, 2025 qualified players, Sedain Rafaela actually has more outs above average in the outfield than Pete does. He has 20. But if you look at 5-star opportunities, Sedain Rafaela has 22 opportunities and he's gotten 5 outs. So 22.7%. That's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Pete Crow Armstrong is second. He has 14 outs and 24 opportunities for a 58.3% shot of making an out on a 5-star catch. Next up is Victor Scott, 5 outs on 19. Jacob Young, 4 outs on 20. Nobody else's number starts with Denzel Clark with the A's has 4 outs in 12 chances, and that is the only other number that starts with a 3. The rest of these are like 20%, because that's how often you should make a 5-star catch if you're really, really good. Pete Crow Armstrong makes 58% of those catches. Crazy.
I think Pete Crow Armstrong is the type of player that is just going to get better. You know what I mean? Like, he's already elite. But as he gets a little bit older, you know, maybe swing decisions, maybe a little bit better, but he's still going to have that fire and he's still going to steal 40, 50 bags. Yeah. So, yeah, well, I think sky's the limit.
And I think that, and you know, you were talking about Andrew Jones. Andrew Jones kind of missed the Statcast era. Like, we don't have those types of metrics for him. So to my mind, maybe the best center fielder during that time is Kevin Kiermaier.
Yeah.
And PCA has better numbers than Kiermaier. It's just insane. Like, we get to watch him all the time. And the last thing I'll say there is playing center at Wrigley is harder than playing center at some of these other parks, because that wall is brick behind the ID. Yep. And the basket means you can't make the leaping, like those leaping, like save a home run catches don't happen at Wrigley because nobody can jump higher than the basket. You can't rob from the basket. The basket giveth and the basket taketh away, right?
Right.
So PCA is making those catches on plays that truly, occasionally it blows my mind because he doesn't even dive and it's a five-star catch. He's just got such a good route to the ball. Like, I'll see a ball in the gap to left. I'm like, that's a double because Hap's not getting to that ball. And PCA will come streaking in from center and make the catch. And I'm like, that's not possible.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a superstar. I think at some point sooner than later, he's going to be like a top five.
I agree.
Top five. But
not next year. Next year, you might still be able to get him in the third. Because he showed some weakness this year.
Everybody's going to point to that. They're going to say, well, look at his plate discipline, or look at his O swing, or look at this, look at that. I'm going to be like, he's going to fix all that. It's going to be good. Yeah. So Pete Crow Armstrong, definitely on all my teams. Sarah, we're about around an hour, but I wanted to get your thoughts, your last word on Chicago Cubs legend retired this week, Mr. Anthony Rizzo. You know, happy trails, Mr. Rizzo. I like the Cubs. I root for the Cubs. I've been in Wrigley Field, you know, many, many, many times. But I gotta say, shout out to Anthony Rizzo. What do you say?
Oh man. Okay. Well, I promise not to go on another hour. I was at Rizzo's retirement day on Saturday. I wrote about it for Bleed Cubby Blue. So if you are so inclined to read a Cubs centric piece, go over to Bleed Cubby Blue and check that out. A handful of things that I want to make note of. So when that got announced, and I've been at days where there are giveaways at Wrigley Field that the lines stretch beyond the block and everything, the crowds for Anthony Rizzo retirement day at 2 hours before the game when the gates open were as long of lines as I have ever seen. Mm-hmm. And I was there for Javier Baez bobblehead day, which those lines were so crazy. They actually changed the rules of which gates could give away giveaways because there was a firehouse. There's a firehouse across the street from left field that was blocked by the crowd in the street. Right. And so they were like, you can no longer do giveaways here because the fire truck literally can't get out of the firehouse. So that was Javier Baez bobblehead day. Rizzo's crowds rivaled that. Fans were lined up to welcome him, ready to go. And I was there. So I was there when gates opened. I did my filling in my scorecard, like always. And about an hour before the game started, there was just an eruption. You heard the fans erupt and you knew Rizzo was on the field. So the first thing he does is he walks out to the IV and he recreates the last thing he had done when he got traded. Him and his family went out. They were in the outfield. And there's this picture of Anthony Rizzo, like arms spread out like this in the IV at the 400 marker. So yeah. He's got his son. He's got like a 3-month old, like they had a kiddo in like June, right? So it's tiny baby and his wife. And he goes out and he recreates that scene and the fans welcome him back. And every time he moves, fans are cheering.
Right.
He then walks over to first base. We go nuts. He holds his son up like the tarp catch that he did back in the day. Like, you remember where Anthony Rizzo like climbs up on the ledge, makes the catch, and then comes down. He had a tarp catch and a ledge catch, by the way, that's epic. Platinum glover, Anthony Rizzo. Do you know how hard it is to win the platinum glove as the first baseman? Anthony Rizzo did it. throws out the first pitch. All of this is legendary and epic and amazing. And then the impossible happens. And I do mean impossible because I am as into stats as any person on the planet. It is why I love baseball. My parents had this old like coffee table book of baseball players, which is how I would like just pour over it and memorize like home run totals and stuff. Cause I'm weird. But Moises Ballesteros comes to the plate, hitting cleanup for the Cubs, which he is the first rookie to hit cleanup for the Cubs since Ron Santo. Hall of Famer Ron Santo. So, like, keep that in mind when in your drafts next year. Is Moises Ballesteros might be UT only to start the season, but definitely worth your time. Hits a home run, no doubter to left. And I'm like, that's where Rizzo's sitting. Like, I know where Rizzo's sitting because he's one section over from where I usually sit in the bleachers in the left field well. And then I see the video and the ball bounces off Anthony Rizzo's hand. Now, I don't know what the odds are of legend retires and rookie 21-year-old phenom hits his first home run to the hand of the legend who is retiring. But I am 100% sure this has never happened in the history of baseball. It is unbelievably amazing. And it was magic, man. It was magic. He sang the stretch with Eddie Vedder. They hung out on the rooftop of Murphy's bleachers afterwards. It was perfection. And Anthony Rizzo is a king. I'm very sad that he did not stay a Cub his whole career because I'm sure they would have built a statue for him. I hope they relax whatever standards they have on this and just retire his number someday because literally no one will object to it.
I was watching it. I was amazed. I knew he was beloved by all Chicago Cubs fans, but I didn't realize just how much he meant to that team. And, you know, obviously to the World Series win with him and Kyle Schwarber. What happens? Kyle's a free agent. What happens if they sign him back? Is that even possible?
I mean, I don't think they will, but it would be amazing. That World Series team. So one more thing about Anthony Rizzo and the World Series team. If you're a Cubs fan of a certain age, your whole life was like, they can't do, like, something is going to go wrong.
Right.
Something always goes wrong. Like, you were there for the Bartman game, and you were there for the Steve Garvey nonsense, and something always went wrong. You were there for collapses, and you watched stuff go bad, and you watched, like, Sammy Sosa was the best home run hitter on the planet, and then there was a corked bat. Like, something always goes wrong.
Right.
And Rizzo came in. The first move Theo Epstein made, trading for Anthony Rizzo, traded Andrew Cashner to the Padres for a prospect first baseman who hadn't hit very well. And when Rizzo showed up at Wrigley Field, he became the leader of that team. There's this game they played against the Reds in like 2012 or 13, I can't remember exactly which year, where Aroldis Chapman buzzes the tower of Chris Coughlin.
Yeah.
And Coughlin, you know, he's fine, but whatever. But as Rizzo comes out to first base, the Reds dugout is kind of jawing at him. And Rizzo goes, he's like going to take on the entire Reds by himself. Like, he throws his glove down and starts walking over there.
Right.
And we were all like, yes, we have a guy. We've got a guy, right? So Rizzo was first. He signs a team-friendly extension to make this happen in Chicago. And then they start putting the pieces around him. So they draft Kyle Schwarber with like the third or fourth pick overall. And everybody's like, why are you drafting this guy who's never going to catch with the third or fourth pick? Well, because he hits like David Ortiz. That's why.
Right.
You know, they go out, they get Chris Bryant. They go out, Javier Baez and Wilson Contreras were actually already in the system. They were Hendry people, which is a whole other riff that I have. We can do another time. And then they go sign they signed some pitchers who are winners, right? Like, they signed John Lester and John Lackey. They bring in these guys Theo knew from his Red Sox day. And they say, game on, right?
Yep.
And that team was incredible. The 2016 team had no idea that they were supposed to lose, or that something was supposed to go wrong. And they didn't. They did not lose. They were so good. Kyle Schwarber tears his knee up like the third game of the season, has a fully reconstructed knee, and watches 2,000 breaking pitches in the Arizona Fall League before he comes back and is the designated hitter in the World Series. It is one of the most unbelievable things I've ever seen in my life. Anthony Rizzo was at the absolute center of it. It was amazing. Oh, we might have lost Britain. Red Sox traded Rizzo to the Padres, and then the Cubs got Rizzo from the Padres for Andrew Cashner, So yes, you are correct. They got Rizzo directly from the Padres. Britton, you're back.
I'm so sorry.
No, you're good. So I was like, I was just answering questions.
Thank you for covering for me. Yes, I really appreciate you. Hey, I saw one thing I wanted to highlight real quick. Somebody in the chat said, where can I find Sarah's contact? Here we go. Sarah, please tell everybody where they can go find your analysis and all your work.
Oh, thank you so much. That's so kind of you. I do Cubs writing at bleedcubbyblue.com over on SB Nation. I also host a podcast with a handful of people from that site. It's called the Bleacher Bunch Network. I'm on Cup of Cubby Blue, and on our Thursday night, we like do a live show kind of like this, Thursday night at 8 o'clock Central. So I'm on that a couple of times a month. And then I also do my fantasy analysis is all at Baseball HQ. So I write their Playing Time Tomorrow column for the NL Central. And I am keeping an eye on all of the rosters, 40 man, minor league, all that jazz to see who the next Sal Stewart or who the next Moises Ballesteros is going to be, trying to help you out that way with your fantasy teams.
Sarah, I can't thank you enough for doing this. I apologize for some of these technical difficulties, but as pros do, you handled it and kept the show going. I greatly appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Anytime, man. This was a blast.
I hope everybody that has a chance to go to follow you on X and Blue Sky and everywhere else you are, and maybe enough people click on there that she'll come back and give us some more fantasy baseball talk and advice, because you are awesome, Sarah. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, at @BCB_Sarah over at X. And make plans now, y'all. November in Arizona. First pitch Arizona. I will be there. Britton will be there. You should be there.
And we're planning something special, too. The Palazzo and Sarah will be involved. Not saying anything more than that, but if you needed just a little extra motivation, it's going to be a blast. Please come see us and say hello. I'll be at the bar, probably. So you can always find me there, but also go find Sarah on X and Blue Sky. Sarah, I'm going to click the button to end stream, and I think that's it.
Bye. Thanks.
See ya. Good night. Thanks, everybody.
40 times in Cleveland again, still Cleveland. Come on down to Cleveland Town, everyone. Come and see our baseball team play ball. Maybe place a bet before you get there. Place a bet on the first pitch of the game. Don't worry if you forgot to place a bet. There are ads everywhere across the field. Make a paper airplane with a note and send it to the Cleveland Bullpen now. Ask for any leads on player props. The Cleveland Bullpen is filled with gambling pros. After all, we did this shit for 70 years. Then we thought that this was a better idea. But MLB don't give a shit! They don't give a shit! Plus, Cleveland wishes they were Detroit now!
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.